Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ballistic Podcast, the playoff version of the Ballistic Podcast, NBA playoffs. We've all been waiting for this, and it's finally here. I'm your co-host, Guru Ram Prakash, and along with me from Skype, as usual, you know, sometimes we get together, but today he's on Skype. It's Vikram Kanth, your best friend and my favorite co-host, Vikram Kanth. Vikram, how are you doing? Are you ready for the playoffs?
I am so ready for the playoffs.
Okay, I mean,
I'm so ready for the playoffs.
We've been waiting for the matchups to come out because really they weren't finalized until the final day of the season. We saw a lot of teams, especially in the West, move around, and some teams are happy with their matchup and other teams are happy with their first round matchup, but not quite happy with the road they have to take to get to the finals, right, Vikram?
There are going to be some very disappointed teams, or there are disappointed teams, actually. There are a couple. The Rockets come to mind for this award of the most disappointed team with their matchups.
Yeah, I mean, the road to the finals for them. And also the Warriors. I mean, they play the 1-8 matchup, obviously, with the Clippers. But after that, they could face the Rockets in the second round. And then after that, you face whoever got to the first two rounds on the other bracket, so that could be OKC, that could be Utah, could be Denver. We obviously we're gonna get into that when we discuss all of these first round matchups. So basically, this agenda for the episode, this is the playoff episode. We're gonna be discussing all first round matchups. We are well aware that a lot of stuff happened today. Today is, some people like to call it Black Thursday, other people like to call it Pink Slip Thursday, but a lot of executives, coaches lost their jobs or resigned, stepped down, whatever you want to say. And there's a lot to talk about that as well. And we actually wanted to talk about all of that in a separate episode that we record in the next couple of days. So we're going to stick to playoffs for this episode. And we're going to talk about all the other stuff, the extracurricular stuff, in our next episode when the playoffs are already underway. And yeah, so that's basically what we're going to do. So without further ado, let's get into these matchups. Vikram, are you ready, or do you have any first impressions as you see how the matchups have turned out in both conferences?
You know, I'll be honest. I think that these, you know, I actually think we need to give a special shout out to the Denver Nuggets, who have somehow, you know, they tanked away a game in Portland like a week ago. And they did that for strategic positioning, and that has worked out so well for them. Like, I am truly in awe of what the Denver Nuggets have accomplished in terms of their road to the Western Conference Finals. Hmm. I actually think, in terms of what they're going to do, like, the Nuggets have situated themselves in a really, really good way for the bracket. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's my initial outcome. Like, that's my initial thought here, because they're facing San Antonio first, and then they're going to face the winner of the Portland OKC bracket, which is far preferable to facing Houston or Golden State. So, you know, what they did, they got the best outcome possible in letting Portland be the 3 seed. Mm-hmm. So I think that they did a really good job to avoid the brackets in that way.
I mean, so I'll start.
I thought that was.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, Denver, they could have been in a situation where they either had to play OKC in the first round or Utah. And that would have been significantly tougher than, you know, a matchup with the Spurs. So, I mean, the Denver Nuggets definitely positioned themselves well as far as the bracket goes. Obviously, I guess what I would have to say for that is, like, so, things could have gone bad for the Nuggets had they lost their final game against the Timberwolves.
And they nearly did.
They nearly did. But if they did that, they would have to play Oklahoma City. And that would have been a very, very difficult matchup, just because you go up against two superstars on the Thunder side that are very experienced come playoff time. So, okay, without further ado, I mean, like, we're already talking about it. So let's get into the matchup. So I'm going to, I mean, obviously, we've, like, in our minds, we sort of prioritize these matchups from like from most important to least important, I guess. So let's start in the East. Let's start in the East and then carry on to the West. Hopefully the conversation will start heating up. So in the Eastern Conference, the 1-8 matchup is the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Detroit Pistons. Rather, if you want to say it the other way around, the Detroit Pistons at the Milwaukee Bucks. So obviously the Milwaukee Bucks, best regular season record in the league this year. They'll have home court advantage through the playoffs and the finals, assuming they make it that far. And they're yet led by MVP candidate Giannis Antetokounmpo, along with Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton. They are in the same division as the Detroit Pistons, and the Bucks took the season series 4-0, unsurprisingly. The Pistons are back in the playoffs after a couple of years of hiatus, and they are led by all-star Blake Griffin. And he's sort of taking the reins of that team and led him to this position. So congratulations to the Pistons on making the playoffs, and they have a very tough matchup against the Bucks. So Vikram, what are your first impressions of the series? I assume there are not many impressions here.
Dude, this is a lock it in 4-0 series, especially with like Blake Griffin being hurt. Although to be honest, I don't even think a matchup between like these teams with a healthy Blake Griffin would be that entertaining. I think the Milwaukee Bucks have, I think, the best defender for against Blake Griffin and Giannis, like, possible. So I don't necessarily think this is going to be a very competitive series at all. I would put money on this being a sweep, actually. That's my impression. Honestly, I don't see a way for the Pistons to put up a competent offense against Milwaukee, period. And on the other end, I don't know how the hell they're going to defend against what Milwaukee wants to do. So I just don't see how they're going to put up any semblance of a fight against Milwaukee.
I mean, especially when your offense is like dependent on one guy, and that one guy is Blake Griffin, who, as you said, is going through injury issues. But even if he's at the top of his game, all the Bucks have to do is come over and double him. And who is going to give Blake Griffin help on the offensive end? Like, Reggie Jackson has been inconsistent. The overall wing depth for the Detroit Pistons has been lacking. Then they didn't really end the season very well. Andre Drummond is not really a person you can depend on offensively, other than maybe to get rebounds and get you extra possessions. But like, I mean, Milwaukee has all the pieces to beat the Bucks, and this should be a very quick series. I don't even think this will be a gentleman's sweep. I think this will be an outright sweep. Bucks 4-0 over the Pistons. I assume that you're in agreement, Vikram.
100% in agreement.
Yes.
It will be a sweep.
Okay. So with that, we go to our next series. And that next series is going to be the Orlando Magic playing at the Toronto Raptors. So first of all, I want to congratulate the Orlando Magic for making the playoffs after, I believe, an 8-year, has it been 8 years? It's been 7 or 8 years.
I think it's seven.
It's basically the year, from the year Dwight Howard left, the Magic have been rebuilding, and obviously they've had some failed rebuilding efforts within that time span, but they finally found a way to make the playoffs. Congratulations to them. And really, like, speaking of teams that just make the playoffs, we sort of degrade the accomplishment of making the playoffs. That's the mistake we do in the media, and that's why teams are more susceptible to tanking, because they don't really want to take the heat of a team that like goes to the playoffs and gets knocked out early. But I mean, that's part of the process of growing as a team, and hopefully for the Orlando Magic, this could be the start of something new. I'm not taking that from a Disney movie or anything, but anyways, let's talk about the series a little bit. Orlando, the Magic, are obviously led by Nikola Vucevic, first time All-Star. He's pretty much the reason why the Orlando Magic are in this position right now. They have a lot of interesting youth on their team, including Jonathan Isaac, who is a second year player who's starting for them. Evan Fournier is a solid wing. DJ Augustine, you could argue that he should not be starting on an NBA team, but there he is. He's the point guard, and he's been having a good season. He's a solid guy for sure.
Honestly, he's been having a great season. Okay. Like, I'll be honest, the idea that a pick and roll with DJ Augustine and Nikola Vucevic is like a potent weapon for a playoff team, like, that, if you had told me that at the beginning of the year, I would have been like, you're completely out of your mind. But here we are.
And credit to Steve Clifford, new coach, for unlocking that, really.
Absolutely. This is another one of those, like, more power to you, Steve Clifford. You did a good job.
Right. And Terrence Ross, he comes off the bench for them. He's a solid six man, as solid as you can get. Obviously, the Raptors, they have players for days. They're deep and they have stars. And obviously, the biggest star is Kawhi Leonard, and he's a force on offense and on defense. And hopefully, he's the reason why the Raptors would go far in the playoffs. But they also got Danny Green, Kyle Lowry, who's healthy for maybe the first time in the playoffs that I've seen. There always seems to be an injury with him, but I'm glad that he's healthy. And obviously, future Most Improved Player Award winner, I can say Pascal Siakam, who's been a very important part of what they do. And I mean, they got players for days. That's the reason they're unstoppable. Oh yeah, Marc Gasol. Jeremy Lin coming off the bench for them. Fred VanVleet, who is an undrafted guy they found and they developed. They're pretty deep, and that's why this is as hard of a first round matchup as you're going to see if you're the Magic.
Yeah, I mean, I am in complete agreement with you as far as the Magic's odds being competitive in this series. I just, again, like, this is another kind of similar thing that I had with the Pistons, is I just don't see how the Magic are going to put up any offense. And the reason I say that is I don't know that there's a better defender for Nikola Vucevic than Marc Gasol, because I don't think Nikola Vucevic is going to be effective in the post. And the only thing that I would worry about from, like, a schematic perspective is a pick and pop with DJ Augustin and Nikola Vucevic. And with the types of defenders you have for Toronto, you're more able to kind of help and recover on that type of scheme. So, like, I don't necessarily see exactly how Orlando is going to put up points, especially with Aaron Gordon being as limited as he is, with Jonathan Isaac being definitely a minus on offense, not on defense. He's a phenomenal defender. But I just don't see quite how this Orlando team is going to put up points. I do think they're going to defend effectively. And I think Steve Clifford deserves a lot of credit for that schematically. And also, like, Nikola Vucevic deserves credit for becoming a competent defender. He was somebody who was a minus defender before, but this year has really turned it up on that end too. I am worried about DJ Augustin's ability to check
Kyle Lowry.
I think that's going to be problematic. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the hell is going to defend Kawhi Leonard. I think you're going to put Jonathan Isaac on him and hope for the best. But I just think that this is going to be a really difficult series for Orlando. If they, like, I'm going to give them one game. My prediction is in five games, I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just don't know how they're going to generate enough offense to win, to have, you know, a chance to win more than that.
And you know, they tied the season series 2-2, winning one game at home and one game at Toronto. Obviously, you have to look into those games and see, were those games that Kawhi Leonard was resting? Was Toronto having one of those bad games? You know, those types of things tend to not happen in the playoffs, which it might be a gentleman's sweep, but I'm going to predict a full sweep, and I think it's going to be 4-0 Toronto in this series.
Definitely possible.
Yes, and so that's what we're going with. And again, congratulations to the Magic. But
absolutely,
yeah.
We definitely need to stress that point again before we move on, which is that there is still real importance to being a playoff team, especially when you're like the Magic and you haven't been in the playoffs for so long. Like, this is huge for them.
Right. And we can only hope that they continue this trend upwards.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, I'm really happy for the Magic. And honestly, I'm really happy for, like, Nikola Vucevic. He's been one of my favorite players, actually, in the NBA for a while. Mostly because of how he, you know, like, he's an old school post player, and I really appreciated that. But it's nice to see that his game has really expanded with his range. On the defensive end, being, you know, a more unathletic big. But I'm just so happy for this Magic team. And I'm really excited to watch them moving forward. So, like, I think this is, they're, you know, it's going to be a hard series to watch, I think. But I think it's going to be fun for us, and I think it's going to be a good series overall. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And hopefully the Magic find a way to, you know, use this as a launching pad for future years, sign Nikola Vucevic next year. So, okay, with that, we move on to our next matchup, and that's the six-seeded Brooklyn Nets. Yes, you heard me right.
Oh, yeah.
The Brooklyn Nets playing versus the Philadelphia 76ers, who are the three seed. So the Brooklyn Nets, again, another team that deserves a lot of congratulations. And really, they did it the hard way. They rebuilt the team really without much draft capital. We've gone over this again and again, Bikram. People who have listened to us in the past have listened to us gush about how the Nets have built up their team. And obviously, they're led by their all-star D'Angelo Russell. But Caris LeVert, had he not gotten hurt, maybe he could have been the all-star for the Nets instead of D'Angelo Russell. Who knows? But, I mean, he's sort of trying to work his way back from that injury still. But they also have a ton of skill players around D'Angelo Russell as well, including Jared Allen, who's a very, very good center. And we never talked about this, but Joel Embiid has an injured knee. So maybe Jared Allen is a guy who could take advantage of that. Maybe not. But anyways, it's a topic to talk about. And Joe Harris, he won the three-point contest this year. He's one of the best sharpshooters in the league. Damari Carroll has rebounded from injury-plagued years to be a good role player for the team as well. So they're a team really with a bunch of role players who fit their roles perfectly, and that's a credit to Kenny Atkinson for building up that team. The Sixers, they made a lot of noise during the season itself with the trades they made. They traded for Jimmy Butler and for a couple of games into the season, they traded for Jimmy Butler. And right before the deadline, they traded for Tobias Harris. And they arguably have one of the best starting lineups in the Eastern Conference, if not the NBA. And really, it really hasn't worked out because, I mean, I really, after you make trades, it's hard to find that chemistry between one another. And moreover, the pieces don't really fit together, especially Jimmy Butler not being the shooter that he is really hurts them when Ben Simmons is also on the floor. But Joel Embiid has had a fantastic year for them. And yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to say about the Sixers. So Sixers, Nets, Vikram.
Let me put a couple things on the board there.
Sure.
So chemistry is one thing, fit is one thing, but I think the biggest thing that's really plagued them is that starting lineup hasn't played that much with each other, like in terms of minutes, and there's a really important reason for that.
Sure.
And it's something that's systematic with the 76ers. That's simply that their bench is so awful. It is completely devoid of any real talent. That's not really a knock at somebody like Mike Scott, who I think is a fantastic role player in the NBA.
Their
6, 7, and 8 men are like awful. Shake Milton, who was a second round pick in the 50s, is playing significant minutes for them. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that you just cannot afford right now. So those are the types of things I think are really problematic for them. So like those attributes are going to be really problematic for them. And more importantly, I just think overall, they're going to end up in a really sticky situation against the Nets. And even if they make it through the Nets, they're going to end up in a sticky situation against in the next round against Toronto. I think it's almost hopeless for them in that matchup because of this. And this is with a healthy Joel Embiid that I would be saying this. With an injured Joel Embiid, I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm still quite confident that they're going to be able to beat the Nets, but you know, with him being injured, with Jimmy Butler not taking a whole lot of jump shots, with the ability for other teams to scheme the bench plus scheme in addition to be able to scheme off Ben Simmons, like I think there are some serious concerns that this team's got to have. So I'm pretty concerned for the 76ers right now. Like I'm not sure what their lineup is going to look like against a very determined Nets team. So we'll see, but I think this is going to be like a six gamer. I don't think this is going to be as quick as one might think.
I'm in agreement with you. Listen, the Sixers are pretty much a shoo-in to beat the Nets. The Nets as a team, they're very young. They don't have much playoff experience, though they do have veterans on their team. I mean, their main guys don't have the playoff experience, and so that is why I'm saying that. But I just remember talking about the Sixers last year, and them being a team on the rise, and signing Marco Bellinelli, signing Ersan Ilyasova last year, that really opened up the floor for them. And this year, it's been the opposite. Really, they don't have the depth. You're right, and they're gonna have to find lineups out there on the floor that really help them. And Mike Scott, like, credit to Mike Scott, he's played really well, but he's not a guy who I would love to depend on, especially, I mean, going into the second round where you're gonna face one of those top four teams in the East. I mean, obviously we know the matchups, we know the brackets. Is most likely going to be Toronto. But yeah, you bring up a really good point. Excuse me?
I think you can lock that one in there. If they beat the Nets, which I don't think is a foregone conclusion, they're definitely going to play Toronto. I'm pretty confident that Toronto is going to beat the Magic.
So I mean, we've talked about why Philly would lose games. Why would the Nets win games, in your opinion?
So I think the biggest thing from a schematic perspective is that all of the centers outside, so the only lineup that doesn't do this is Mike Scott at center, but all of the centers for Philadelphia are going to be running drop coverage in the pick and roll. And D'Angelo Russell is very, very good against that type of coverage in the pick and roll. He kind of struggles more with a switching defense, and Philadelphia doesn't do that because they don't necessarily have the personnel. You want Joel Embiid close to the rim. If Boban is in the game, he is absolutely not going to be on the perimeter. That would be a really bad idea. I'm pretty sure even D'Angelo Russell is going to be able to blow by Boban. Somebody like Jonah Bolden is probably your best bet. Like, I actually think Jonah Bolden is going to get some significant minutes in the playoffs in this series because of this schematic issue. D'Angelo Russell is so good with that drop coverage that I would be a little concerned about, like, systematically how you're going to take that away from the Nets. And if he can get hot, you know, I think that's really the path to victory for the Nets. And then, you know, Dinwiddie being able to be a bigger, like a big shot creator for them. Like, those are the types of issues I think that Philadelphia is going to have with the 76ers. So,
and you bring up Dinwiddie, right? Dinwiddie has had a couple of huge games against the Sixers. And I think I can attribute it to what you've just said, that drop coverage. Guarding Spencer Dinwiddie, either you have to stick to him and he drives right past you, but he's shown to be a competent shooter, and that's the type of thing. Absolutely. Yeah, keep going.
Absolutely, he's good. D'Angelo Russell is going to carve up that drop coverage, and you know, with schematically how weak I think the 76ers are going to be on offense, I mean they probably have the four best players in the series.
They do.
I think you're
pulling Harris with D'Angelo Russell versus a guy like Tobias Harris, right? But arguably, you can say that.
I'm not even pulling Harris. Tobias Harris is a better player than D'Angelo Russell. Like, definitely. Well,
okay.
It's not even close.
Okay, fine.
It's not close. It is definitely, it's not close. Like,
for a team with the four best players in this series, those four best players, see, the thing is, like a basketball team, it's like a puzzle. You got to fit those pieces together. And I mean, but sometimes you got to, like, you know, you would take the piece, you would cut it to make it fit. The thing about the Nets is that they're a puzzle. Their pieces just fit, and they know what lineups to put on the floor against certain matchups. And that's, I mean, obviously that's where Kenny Atkinson comes in. That's where Sean Marks comes in. But Philly, they're the opposite in the way that, oh my God, you got all these big, huge pieces that can, like, they can mold themselves to some extent, but not really, right? And that's where the problem is for the Sixers. They're an incomplete puzzle.
Oh yeah, this, like, the idea that somehow the Sixers are gonna, like, own this team, like, if things work out, if they're able to be competent on offense and they can run some action for JJ Redick, and they can really get good shot creation from Tobias Harris and a little bit from Jimmy Butler, and Joel Embiid is, you know, somewhat healthy, I think they can, you know, they could absolutely sweep the Nets. I just think that outcome is lower on the set of possible ones.
Okay.
So like that's my opinion with that.
So my official prediction is going to be, I think it's going to, even though we have talked about the Sixers in the most disparaging way we can talk about a 3 seed, I still got Sixers in 5.
Yeah, I mean, I said 6 because I think I think I'm spotting the Nets a couple games with Joel Embiid hurt.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think the backup center rotation for Philly is pretty poor. Like, I don't think they have 48 minutes at competent centers outside of Embiid.
Sure.
Even if you play Mike Scott for, you know, extended minutes.
Right.
So I worry about that. And if you're playing him here, if you're playing him there, then, you know, there are other issues that you might have.
Right. Like, so your official prediction.
Forward depth, right? Like,
yeah.
But I think I really do think a lot is going to have to come. Like, Ben Simmons is going to have a good series. Although I'm really starting to sour on him because his lack of a jump shot really makes a lot of problems.
Especially in the playoffs.
Not that wasn't immediately obvious, but.
I mean, this is the playoffs. If you have a weakness, teams are going to exploit it. They watch hours and hours and hours of film. You can bet that the Nets know how to guard Ben Simmons and even how to stop him from being an effective passer. So, okay, I mean, we'll see how it goes. But, I mean, I think your official prediction is Sixers in 6. I got them in 5. Okay, so let's move on to the next Eastern Conference matchup. The Celtics and the Pacers. Okay, first of all, we got to commend the Pacers for sort of riding the ship in a way after Victor Oladipo went down with that horrendous injury. And obviously, you wanted to say something? Sorry.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, riding the ship, I think it's admirable how they've survived without Victor Oladipo.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should like hugely get on that train simply because they're a sub-500 team without him. I think it's been impressive what they've done, certainly. And the fact that they're still the 5th seed is a testament to them. But I think it's more of a testament about the fact that
it could have gone worse, really.
Well, honestly, I'm not sure because the 6, 7, 8 seeds are pretty weak in the East. So, or unproven is probably the best way to say it because I really do like what the Nets have done this year. But in terms of record, the Magic and, you know, the Pistons are not like lighting any fires, right?
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from there. But I wanted to give the Pacers credit for keeping pace, even though they lost their best player. And keeping your head up. I think that's another thing. I think that's the kind of attitude that Miles Turner has. And so the Pacers, obviously, they're without Victor Oladipo. They still have Miles Turner. Bojan Bogdanovic has had a good couple of months ever since Victor Oladipo got injured. He's sort of stepped up offensively. He's a sharpshooter for them. Darren Collison, he's a good solid point guard. Domantas Sabonis is a good guy to have off your bench as a big. Thaddeus Young is a good, he's always seemed to carve a role for himself, and that is the pretty much the lineup for the Pacers. And they're going up against the Celtics, who have been a quandary this season. I do not know what to think of the Celtics. And it's really because Kyrie Irving, I mean, he's been really, really good this season, no doubt. But it's really, really clear that he does not fit in the Celtics sort of pace and
egalitarian
offense. There you go. That's the word. That's really the word I was looking for. And what,
that's a system thing with Brad Stevens. So, like, I think that's totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I would say is I'm going to be really interested in who this team starts for the Celtics. Like, are they going to start? My big question is, are they planning on starting Baines and Horford together, for example? And that's important because I think Thad Young presents a little bit of a matchup problem against a smaller, like if you were to put Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown at the four, for example, or even a Gordon Hayward, I think Thad Young would have a good ability to post up. So, like, I think that's one thing that they're going to have to be pretty careful about in the starting lineup. But I do have a little bit of confidence that Brad Stevens is going to be able to figure this out for sure. So I'm not too worried about that from like an X's and O's schematic perspective, but those are the types of things I think in the series are going to be interesting. But I don't necessarily think that the 76ers are, or sorry, that the
Pacers
are Pacers. Even likely to be close to winning the series.
Right. And obviously, I think it's because the most important player on the Celtics is Al Horford. When he plays well, the Celtics tend to play well, and they win a lot of games. I see him taking a big role in this series, and especially considering, look, this is the playoffs, right? And I mean, we see teams that sort of have the switch. Do you believe that the Celtics have the proverbial switch?
Oh, absolutely. I think they do have the switch, especially Kyrie. Kyrie lives for the playoffs. I think that, like, that part of it, I'm quite confident about.
And that's his Cleveland experience, right? That's his experience with Cleveland, with LeBron.
Well, I mean, I think he is best in the playoffs. He's a proven playoff performer. And like most people can't say that they hit the shot in game 7 of the finals to win their team a championship. And like, we really shouldn't take that away from Kyrie, because he does deserve, you know, the respect of his accomplishments in the past. Like, he's done some phenomenal things as an NBA player. So like, we really can't take that away from him. But that being said, you know, this team itself is not, like, they're not indomitable. They're definitely worse than I had thought that they would be at the beginning of the season. I think if we had done, you know, win-loss predictions at the beginning of the year, we would have picked them for a lot more wins than they had this year.
I would have picked them to be the number one seed, and I think I did. I think I picked them to be the number one seed, and probably more than 60 wins.
I don't know. I don't think I would have picked them for 60 wins, but I do think I would have picked them for a significant number of wins. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't look like that was a very good pick for us.
Yeah, right. And that's partly due to, you know, working Gordon Hayward in the lineup and, you know, sacrificing some games because of that. But they had some games like in the beginning, middle of the season that just made you shake your head. Like, what kind of team will this be come playoff time? And I think I agree with you that, I mean, as long as Kyrie does have that proverbial switch, and as long as his teammates last year, they had a great postseason. Jason Tatum had about as good of a postseason as you could have as a rookie. Jaylen Brown had a respectable postseason. Marcus Smart is a good defensive stopper, and those players tend to have great impact in the postseason. Al Horford had a great playoffs last year.
Let's not forget, we should definitely say this because this is the important piece of news, but Marcus Smart's out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yes, he is.
He's not going to be in the series.
And thank you for bringing that up. Right.
Yeah, like that's really, really significant. So, I mean, you know, like, that's a big freaking deal.
Not in this series, but again, you got to go play the Bucks.
Not this series, but the next series, I think, is where that's going to rear its ugly head.
Right. And
those are some of the concerns you should have.
You hit the nail on the head. And talking about this series specifically, Celtics in 5. I think they spot Indiana one game. Game 3, I think Indiana will come out victorious.
I think Celtics are just too talented. But I think it's Celtics in 6.
Ooh, okay. What do you think? You think Indy steals a game in Boston, or they win both of them at home? And Celtics either take game 6, or
I think it's more likely that they win both at home. Mm-hmm. But I'm certainly not confident in the Celtics at all. They're probably the team I'm least confident in, frankly.
They're the least confident team. They're the team I'm least confident in the East in the playoffs, really. But I think in the first round, you got to look at, okay, which team has more playoff experience. Which team did it in the playoffs last year? And as long as Kyrie Irving is the best player on the floor, I think I just have to give it to the Celtics. Now, if this guy Victor Oladipo was healthy, that would be an entirely different story.
I'd be favoring the Celtics right now. That was the case.
Excuse me.
If Victor Oladipo was healthy, I think I might be favoring the I might have favored the Pacers, frankly.
Maybe, but
I'm so low on the Celtics because of the weird season they've had. And, you know, I think the honest truth is it's been the full 82 games of the season. And frankly, I don't know what this team is. Like, I have no idea who they are, what they've done. Like, I don't know.
That's pretty much what I said at the open when we started to talk about this series. We don't know who the Celtics are. And I mean, they could also be the most surprising team in the playoffs, for heaven's sake.
Oh yeah, they could be a really good team, right? Like, they could be You know, they could make it all the way to the NBA Finals and give the Warriors a run for their money. Like, that is certainly a possibility for them.
They're an enigma.
Like, I don't want to foreclose on that, but based on what I've seen, I'm not expecting it.
Okay. So, with that, we go out of the boring. I mean, I don't want to call the Eastern Conference boring, but let's just say it's very predictable what's going to occur there. And we cannot wait for the second round in the East. That's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be some great games. But until that happens, let's move on to the West, where we definitely have a more exciting first round. But we're starting with the 1-8 matchup in the West. That's the Clippers facing the Warriors. So and the Clippers, we did not expect the Clippers to be here after the trade deadline. They traded probably their best player in Tobias Harris. But in that trade, they got back a lot of depth, especially in the name of Landry Shamet. And he's been really good for this Clippers off the bench. And he's part of their bench brigade, I like to call them, for the Clippers, led by Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Probably the best players for the Clippers come off the bench. And that's very interesting, except for the fact that the Clippers really don't have a superstar. Their superstar is really their coach, Doc Rivers, and probably Lou Williams, combination of both of those guys. But that's pretty much what the Clippers are. And congratulations to them on making the playoffs when we didn't believe they would make the playoffs after they made that trade before the trade deadline. So now let's go to the Warriors. The Warriors have had, I don't want to say an up and down season, but they've had highs and lows. The highs being probably their 10-1 start, and the low being KD's impending free agency. But I guess, like, you're not the best team in the NBA without a little drama, right? And DeMarcus Cousins has come back. He's had a couple of rough games here and there, but when he's supposed to show up, he has shown up, and he's played well in the bigger games, I would say. But the Warriors, they're always led by Steph Curry. He writes the ship for them. And there was a scary moment near the end of the season where Steph Curry turned his ankle and you wondered if he was going to miss any games. It doesn't look like way. He looks like he's good to go for game one. And that's always a relief for the Warriors as we look at the playoff picture for them. So, Vikram, I don't imagine we're going to talk about the series too long, but Clippers Warriors, what are your first impressions?
Sign me up for a sweet baby. That's basically all I got to say about the series, to be honest. I don't think that there's really anything schematically that the Clippers can do to slow the Warriors down. And good bench play isn't really that important in the playoffs.
It's
because
not.
Your starters play a lot more minutes. So given that schematic idea, I'm not sure what exactly the Clippers are going to do to either play offense or defense, although, to be honest, I think the Warriors would be well advised in this series to get into the flow from a playoff perspective, again, the flow defensively. I think that's what the Warriors need to take this series to do. Right. And, you know, they're happy about the series because the travel is close. They're probably going to win in a pretty fast number of games. I think that this is a, you know, perfect outcome for the Warriors. The only bad outcome for them is that they might have to play the Rockets in the second round.
Right, and obviously we'll get into that when we talk about the Rockets series. But I think you hit the nail on the head. The Warriors can put, at any point of the game, they can put two All-Stars on the court. And one of those All-Stars is either a supreme offensive player in Kevin Durant or Steph Curry, and a shooter in Klay Thompson, and oh yeah, a really good post player in DeMarcus Cousins, and a really good passer, Draymond Green. Also, they got Andrew Bogut, who has filled in, I don't want to say filled in admirably, but when the Warriors need to have another big on the court, and DeMarcus Cousins has sort of reached his minute limit, he's a good guy to have out there.
Yeah, when you need a big body that, you know, Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell can't really take care of, he's a good option.
And speaking of Kevon Looney, he's looked better in the second half of the season, really completing the pick and roll on offense and becoming a better switcher on defense than he even was in the Rocket series. So really good for him and his development. But yeah, I predict a sweep here. I think the Warriors sweep, and it'll be good for the Warriors to sweep the Clippers because, I mean, as you said, the travel is light in the series and it would give them a good time to, you know, relax and work on their defense and get ready for the next series because the playoff bracket doesn't really look favorable for the Warriors.
Well, I mean, how unfavorable, like, being the number one seed and the best team in the NBA outside of the, like, I think they're still the best team in the NBA, even though the Bucks have a statistically, and the Raptors for that matter, have a statistically better.
But it could have gone better. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I just think that the bracket, like, it sucks that, for them at least, that the Rockets, you know, are on their side of the bracket. Like, yes, that sucks. But to be honest, I'd rather do that than have three really, really hard matchups in the series. Like, for example, I think if they had to play, I think some of the other outcomes could have been worse. Like, if they had to somehow play OKC, then the Jazz, and then the Rockets. Like,
yeah, you make a good point. There were a ton of permutations as far as what the playoff matchups could have been. But hey, it probably sucks more for the Rockets that they have to play the Warriors than the Warriors that they have to play the Rockets. Let's just put it that way. And I mean, with that, I think we pretty much predicted a sweep. Again, congratulations to the Clippers. They're probably going to get a free agent next year. They're on the right track. And yeah, that's what they are. So the next matchup we're going to talk about is the Spurs, the San Antonio Spurs, the 7 seed, going up against the Denver Nuggets, the 2 seed. So, okay, so let's talk. Talk about the Spurs for a second. Obviously, they went over an upheaval. Had an upheaval on their team in the offseason. They traded their best player, Kawhi Leonard, for DeMar and Danny Green. We should not forget about Danny Green, who is a very important role player for the Spurs. They got DeMar DeRozan back, and he's pretty much spent the season trying to fit into Greg Popovich's system, and he's had a pretty solid season, I would say, for them. Obviously, you have some ups and downs trying to adjust, but DeMar DeRozan has been solid, and probably the most important player for the Spurs is LaMarcus Aldridge. He's had a really, really good season for them, putting up some really big numbers, and he'll be the reason why the Spurs do well in the playoffs this year, I would think. Other than that, Derek White, solid guy. They have a bunch of solid guys: Marco Bellinelli, Patrick Mills, Bryn Forbes. The Spurs always seem to develop these rotation players.
Their bellwether.
Huh?
The Spurs bellwether is Davis Bertans.
Davis Bertans, yes. There you go.
It turns out
they always seem to come out with these like solid guys who contribute at an optimal level, and then they leave the Spurs and their career's over.
Yeah, pretty much, dude. Like, that's you know, look at what's Jonathan Simmons doing right now?
Nothing.
Oh wait, he's being unsuccessful in
Philly.
In Philly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, Gary Neal is another guy, but that list goes on and on. But let's move on to the surprising Denver Nuggets. No one expected the Nuggets to be the 2 seed this year after obviously missing the playoffs for the last couple of years. They're the 2 seed, and really it's a credit to Mike Malone and consistently putting the Nuggets rebuilding first. Okay, well, I'm losing my train of thought here, but anyways, let's talk about the Nuggets players. Nikola Jokic, probably the most important player for the Nuggets. You would want him to have a good series and a good playoffs if you want the Nuggets to go far in the playoffs. They're led by the experienced Paul Millsap, who's been to the playoffs more often than not. His experience will very much be leaned on as they move forward, because really he's the only player with experience. Jamal Murray, a third-year player, has not had playoff experience. Gary Harris, I don't know what year he's in the NBA, but he's never been in the playoffs. And they have some solid players off the bench. Probably they're a pretty deep team. Malik Beasley. There's this guy from South Carolina upstate you know his name, Vikram? You know what I'm thinking of? God.
For the Nuggets?
For the Nuggets.
Are you thinking of Torrey Craig?
Yes, I'm thinking of Torrey Craig. Exactly. Yeah, so they have solid guys who come off the bench. So they're a pretty deep team. They don't really have the go-to score where, like, I can, the play breaks down, I can give the ball to him and he can score, that kind of guy. But, you know, the Nuggets, they're a really solid team, and they've completed their rebuilding process by being the 2 seed in the Western Conference. So, Vikram, what do you think of the series? I know a lot of people are nervous about Denver, but is San Antonio the right team to be nervous about?
Honestly, I think a lot of the worries are a little overrated. Like, I understand that you're worried about You're worried about the Nuggets from like a system point of view, and that they're, you know, young, they've never been to the playoffs. Pop is a good coach. Like, there are a couple things. First, I think Pop is a phenomenal coach overall, but I think he's a much better regular season coach than he is a playoff coach. And that's not anything to do with him, but more systematically how you play less of your bench in the playoffs than you do in the regular season. And to be honest, like, San Antonio wins because their bench is phenomenal. Their starting lineup this year is not like that great. Their plus minus in their starting lineup is not phenomenal. So, like, I think that's one thing that I would remark. But the other thing is, I think the biggest problem for the Nuggets is going to be, how the heck are you going to defend DeMar DeRozan? Because your options there aren't particularly great. And what I mean by that is, so you either are going to, you're going to put Will Barton on him to start, and Will Barton is really a shooting guard, not a small forward. That's going to be problematic, number one, because DeMar DeRozan is going to eat him up. On the other side, I think the major issue is going to be, like, let's say you put in Torrey Craig because he's your best perimeter defender on him. If you do that, now you've sacrificed offense and you've put a non-shooter on the floor, and that's going to be a problem. So, you know, there are going to be some schematic things that are going to be hard for the Nuggets to overcome. But that's not to say that they're not, that I don't believe that they're going to win, or they're not the favored team in this matchup, because they definitely are. But that's those are a couple of the remarks that I have in terms of, like, scheme. I think that Jokic is going to be, and I almost said the Jokic instead of the Joker, but I think he's going to be incredibly difficult for the Spurs to stop. I don't think that they have a phenomenal matchup for him. I think LaMarcus Aldridge is underrated defensively and has done a good job this year of being a defensive anchor for the Spurs team, but they're – overall defense is not great, so, like, that's one thing.
They start Jakob Poeltl at center, and that's problematic on defense, really, because he's not really a plus defender, Jakob Poeltl.
Yes, he's not a plus defender at all. Like, I mean, I shouldn't say at all, because I do think he's a good defender. It's just he didn't take the step forward that we anticipated with him, you know,
being on the... He's one of those bigs who, like, sort of depends on his offensive game to really get him on the court, and he's not very athletic, so that's part of the reason, I guess.
I honestly, like, this year has been somewhat of a lost year for him, I almost feel like. And you know, it's funny that he was considered to be a pretty important piece of the trade, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, Danny Green was a throw-in in that trade, and look at how the roles have been reversed a little bit here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just sometimes you got to be more forward leaning on these trades. And I think one of the things that I said in the podcast last week was that I didn't think Masai Ujiri was going to be GM of the executive of the year, and I think I've, upon further reflection, I agree with you that he should be the GM of the year, because I really didn't factor in getting Danny Green, for example, and I think I underrated some of those accomplishments.
That trade wasn't a steal; it was a heist. Anyways,
not to relitigate the past, but it was really good.
Great. So, I mean, you talk about DeMar DeRozan, and he's a really interesting guy, because the last couple of trips to the playoffs for him have not been memorable. I still remember the appearance of him sitting on the bench game four against the Cavs in a must-win game for the Raptors. And that's not the kind of situation that you want DeMar DeRozan to be this year. I think obviously he's with Greg Popovich this year. He might put him in a better position to succeed. But if DeMar DeRozan is not meant for, I don't want to say he's not meant for playoff basketball. That's the wrong phrasing. But what I want to say, that if he has another bad playoffs, what do we think of him as a player moving forward? And also, like, Denver, I think they're the more talented team in this respect. But is it possible for them to be completely schematically owned in the sense by Greg Popovich? I think that is entirely possible, but given Denver's talent gap over the Spurs, I think I have to give Denver the slight nod here. I got Denver in six games.
In six? Yeah, I think that's underrating Denver, and I think that's what they're looking for. I think it's going to be Denver in five, honestly. I don't think they're going to that much trouble. I think the talent gap is big enough. And I think San Antonio has really overperformed this year. And I think a lot of that has to do – I mean, first of all, they're a phenomenally coached team. Like I mentioned, Pop is a phenomenal regular season coach. But I think a lot of that is due to their bench. And I really wonder when, you know, Jokic is going to be playing 40 minutes a game, what exactly are you going to do defensively? I think these are the questions I have for the Spurs. So I think you're being a little low on them, but, you know, it's good for us to disagree. I think they're going to win in five. Mm-hmm. But, I don't think it's impossible for the Nuggets to lose this series either. Yeah. And we'll talk about the next series, but can you imagine a more boring second round matchup than Spurs Blazers?
No. Especially considering how exciting the first round is. No, I cannot imagine that. Please do not bring that up again. But I mean, like you said, that could definitely happen. That is within the realm of possibility, which is why I give the Spurs two games. I think the Spurs win both their games at home, their first two games at home, at least, and the series is tied 2-2 going back to Denver. I think that's when you really test Denver's mettle and really what they're made of, and are they playoff material coming into this year, and what does that mean for their future? So, I mean, these are all like side topics that we can talk about, but with that, we move on to the next series. The 3-6 matchup in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder going up against the Portland Trailblazers. So OKC, obviously they're led by their two stars. That's Russell Westbrook and Paul George. And
order them the other way, to be honest.
Huh?
I said you should probably order them the other way, to be honest.
Yes. Okay. So Paul George and Russell. I mean, it's hard to order them the other way because Russell Westbrook is a former MVP, and you obviously he comes to mind first when you think about the Thunder. But you're right in a way that Russell Westbrook has sort of regressed as a shooter. And he's made it difficult for the Thunder to spread the floor on offense. And that's why the Thunder, being what they are one of the worst teams on offense in the NBA this year. And it's because of that. But really, with them, with the Thunder, they're led by those two players. And the rest of their players leave a lot to be desired, except for Steven Adams. He's a big guy who can really contribute from a post-game perspective. And also defensively for them. Defensively, when they are on, they're on. And they're on a string. They really communicated well. And that's really what their calling card was when they were winning games early on in the season. It was really based on their defense. Because they really lack offensive firepower, whether it is... in their starting lineup or off the bench. Off the bench, they have Dennis Schroeder, who's a really solid point guard to have off the bench, but his shot is on and off, really. And
I think that's overstating what Dennis Schroeder is, too. I think he's been a more destructive player this year than not. But I agree with you. He's certainly a competent backup point guard. Like, that's for sure.
Right.
I just think he's been pretty bad this year.
Like if you put Dennis Schroeder on a team where shooting was better, you never had to really depend on his offense. He's a really good backup point guard. But now you're putting him in a situation where you got to contribute something on offense because Russell Westbrook is bricking all over the floor, and that's putting undue pressure. Because really, Dennis Schroeder and Russell Westbrook, they're sort of the same type of player in a way. And when you put them on the court together, it really puts pressure on Dennis Schroeder to be better offensively than he's accustomed to.
You mean they're the same type of player in the sense kind of volume-y type scorers?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I was going to be like,
I
agree with the basic idea.
Right. Yeah, the same time. Obviously, I'm talking about the offensive end of the floor for the Thunder. So let's talk about the Blazers for a little bit. So the Blazers, obviously, Yusuf Nurkic, that was a huge, huge loss for them. Would have been a great help for them this series, especially going up against Steven Adams on defense as well as offense. But they come with their star backcourt, Lillard and McCollum. You know them. And they're also a backcourt that struggled to perform in the playoffs. they've been effectively schemed against. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happened this year as well. Obviously, Enes Kanter has been starting for Yusuf Nurkic, and he's been performing really well on the statistical side. But as we know, with players, it's not only how they perform statistically, it's what do they do outside of the stat sheet that helps their team. And that's really where Enes Kanter struggles. He struggles on defense, and more specifically, guarding the pick and roll. You look at the other players for the Trailblazers, they don't exactly exude confidence in their team. Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless, Zach Collins, Seth Curry. These are all really good role players, but you really have to wonder what role are they going to play in the playoffs and whether they're going to show up when the lights are brightest. So, Vikram, having gone through that really long introduction, what do you think of the series? And I guess what is it? I was going to ask this. Is it really an upset if the Thunder beat the Blazers?
I don't think that's an upset.
I think that's an upset either. And is it a disappointment if the Thunder lose?
I think if the Blazers won the series, I think that would be an upset, frankly.
Yeah, I would be of that frame of mind as well. So explain your thought process there.
So, I mean, I just think that the Thunder are favored in this matchup, and that's simply because, you know, one of the best players, I think the second best player for the Trailblazers is out in Yusuf Nurkic. And without him, that center line for the Blazers is pretty damn poor. Like, you're looking at Enes Kanter, who is strictly and completely a one-way player. He cannot play defense. He's not a plus defender at all.
He's the best one-way player in the league.
I think Lou Williams has him there, but I really think that he's a really good offensive player. Like, I don't want to take anything away from what Enes Kanter is. Like, he is a really good offensive player. I love his post moves. I love how hard he hits the offensive glass. But first of all, him and Steven Adams are going to be fantastic. Like, that's going to be a great matchup to watch. Like, they're going to be like freaking,
they're going to be eating each other up. That's right. Yeah.
But I don't know how the heck. Like, Enes Kanter, like, these players should be salivating anytime Enes Kanter is on the floor. And I think what's going to end up happening is I think Terry Stotts is going to end up having to start Collins. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's not like a great thing either. And if you're doing that, like, who's your backup? Your backup is then what? You're gonna play Myers Leonard? You're gonna honor Scal Labissiere in the playoffs? Like, is this what we're coming to right now? Like,
obviously, if that were to happen, then Enes Kanter goes back to his original bench role, where I guess he's at his best. But if you're OKC, you do not want Russell Westbrook running the pick and roll, because all Enes Kanter has to do is come under in that respect. You'd probably want Paul George running it, and that's why I think Paul George is a very important player.
Run it with Russell Westbrook. Like, I mean, I know he's not shooting that well, but like, Enes Kanter is such a poor defender with it. Like, I don't even think it would be unfair from an offensive perspective. And I think that's what I would want to do, possession in, possession out, is run pick and roll with Paul George and Steven Adams, or Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams. I think that's your game plan whenever Enes Kanter's in the floor, is to put him in pick and roll. Like, I
just imagine like Paul George cooking up these wing players for the Blazers.
I think Aminu and Harkless are pretty good matchups for Paul George. Like, as far as teams having something to defend Paul George, like, that's not bad.
But what are you doing on the other end?
What was that?
What are you doing on the other end? That's the issue.
I agree. I'm just saying, I think it could be way, way, way worse. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as being able to defend Paul George. Yeah. So
what's your prediction here?
Honestly, I'm going to go Thunder in six.
That's exactly what I was thinking. A Thunder win game six at OKC.
I think that the Thunder are weak enough where, like, if you told me, you know, 2 weeks or a week from now that the Blazers were up in the series and they were about to win, I wouldn't be that surprised either.
Yeah, because the Thunder have had their own rough patch to end the season. When they're not playing well defensively, they are very beatable. And that's what you have to worry about with the Thunder. Will they pack their defense with them? And I mean, this is the playoffs, so I mean, you better do that. But it was a question last year for them, and I think Russell Westbrook wants to get out of the first round. Quite frankly, I mean, last year and the year before it were like terrible for his general reputation, really. In the playoffs, I think the Thunder win 4-2, but again, like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if the Blazers are up. And that's part of this, like, the Western Conference is really unpredictable in that respect.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing, I don't want to foreclose the possibility that the Blazers actually win this, but B, I do think of the teams in the Western Conference outside of Golden State and Houston, I think that the Thunder have the next highest ceiling to make it to the Western Conference Finals. So, like, I don't want to foreclose on that possibility because, you know, when everything is going right for the Thunder, they're a pretty good team.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they have a lot of weaknesses in not having a ton of shooting, which is going to make, like, outside of Paul George, I'm not really worried about any of the other shooters on this team, you know? And that's with Terrence Ferguson having a good year, and that's with Jeremy Grant shooting threes at a pretty good clip in terms of percentage, but again, not in volume. So, I mean, like, these are some of the issues that they're going to have. Like, I don't know. I just don't know what that matchup is going to look like.
I think their lack of shooting will catch up with them eventually. But I think in this series, they're the better team to the point where it doesn't affect them that much, and they're able to pull four games out of this. But again, I mean, all these four. I mean, the Thunder won the season series 4-0, but all these games were close. I think the biggest advantage by which the Thunder won was 9 points. So that's just, I mean, that goes to show these games were close games, and I anticipate them to be close games in the playoffs. Great series,
yeah, I think
it'll be a great series.
Yeah, there are two last comments I got to make.
Sure, sure.
One, if Dame Lillard gets hot, it's over. And two, we don't know how good CJ is going to look, because he's been dealing with injuries and he's had generally a down year for them.
And that's pretty important, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if CJ is not having a good series, they're in trouble.
Yeah, and I remember CJ not having a good series against the Pelicans last year, and that cost the Blazers a first-round matchup. They got swept. So, I mean, there you go. And with that, we move on to our final matchup that we're going to talk about tonight. It's been a long episode, but we're ready to pull through for this final matchup. It's the 4-5 matchup in the Western Conference, the Utah Jazz going up against the Houston Rockets. So, okay, Utah, they've had an interesting year. It's sort of like last year. They started out the year slow, and then all of a sudden they pick up steam past the All-Star break and somehow get to 50 wins. It's sort of inexplicable. Like, if you looked at their record, I would say 20 or 30 games into the season, you'd probably be like, oh, they'll probably sneak their way into the playoffs, but be a lower half team in the West. But they still are a lower half team in the West, but they somehow get to 50 wins, which is amazing by their standards. Obviously, they're led by Donovan Mitchell, who's had an amazing post All-Star break performance in terms of his standards of where he was before that and where he was after. I think he's played really well. Rudy Gobert, Defensive Player of the Year, he'll be a force in this series, especially going up against Clint Capella in that pick and roll. I'll be interested to see how he guards that this year after playing them last year. And Joe Ingles, the ultimate guy you would see at your local 24-hour fitness gym. He's on the Jazz, and he never ceases to impress. And he's one of the best shooters there as well. And on top of that, the Jazz have some depth as well that they manufactured. And that's pretty much what I want to say about the Utah Jazz. And they have a really good home court, so that's something to watch in games 3 and 4. The Houston Rockets, they also had a rocky start to the year and somehow ended up winning 53 games. James Harden, after that rocky start, when Chris Paul got hurt, that's when he really started to turn it on and put on MVP type performances we'll never forget. I'll never forget looking at those box scores and everyone has like 4 points, 2 points, and James Harden somehow has 27. That's
50. Let's be generous.
Like in the beginning of games, right? You look at the first half box score, it'll be like 2, 4. Maybe at the end of the game, some people would have like 10, 12. But like then you look at James Harden, he's like 32. Like what? How is this even? How is it not possible? Right? He was carrying the Rockets for that duration of time, and then Chris Paul came back, and then Clint Capela came back, and then they sort of hit their stride to the point where they're starting to look like the Rockets team that we saw last year.
We loved last year, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or knew and hated last year too. Like depending on how you think about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think he averaged 36.4 a game this season, something like that.
Yep. And he's the last player to do that since MJ. So really, a testament to how offensively significant that record is. And they also, Chris Paul, he's still there. Clint Capela
He's looking good right now.
And he's looking good. He's been looking good since the All-Star break, really. So credit to him for turning it around. Capela, he's off that big contract. He looks really good. But the thing I'm really impressed with the Rockets is that how they added depth through the waiver wire market, like adding Austin Rivers, adding Kenneth Faried. These guys have come in and stepped in and filled roles with the Rockets this year, and I don't want to say they're a really really deep team, but they have just enough depth to the point where they're dangerous. And
I don't know. I think their bench. I think if you're relying on Kenneth Faried as your backup center, you're in trouble. You're in real trouble because Derek Favors.
You're splitting minutes with Nene. And then Clint Capela is going to play most of the minutes anyways. Like you'd imagine Clint Capela playing 38 minutes. So you have 10 more minutes.
Can play all those minutes, to be honest, in this matchup. I think the most significant things for the Jazz are going to be, one, that Ricky Rubio his status is unknown with this whole quad deal. So like that's going to be the big question I have.
God,
right. Is his health and their backup point guards Raul Neto. And Donovan Mitchell is a very capable to play point guard, but it really helps him to have another ball handler. And so when they don't have, and so Dante Exum is hurt, so he's not going to play in this, obviously, because he has a season-ending injury.
Like Dante
so
when Exum, you're looking at, I just want to say something. Dante Exum and hurt are synonymous, really, at this point.
Yes. Dante Exum and hurt are very synonymous. You are absolutely correct about that.
Yes. So anyways, continue, Vikram.
Yeah. So you're looking at, your starting point guard is probably hurt, Ricky Rubio. Your backup point guard is Raul Neto, and you know he's a third string point guard. He's a competent regular season player, but you know he's not anything special in that respect. And you need him to give you really productive minutes. So I mean, like you're kind of limited, is really what I'm trying to get at right now.
I'm on the Utah Jazz team page trying to look up their point guard rotation, just because
their point guard rotation is literally Ricky Rubio and Raul Neto right now, and Donovan Mitchell playing point guard because they don't have any other option.
Yeah. I guess Thabo can play a little point guard, but you don't want him there.
Thabo is more likely to pay power forward for them than he is point guard. Like we're going bottom of the barrel here. Joe Ingles is their next best. Is absolutely their next best option as a ball handler.
I'm just looking at this lineup where they started Donovan Mitchell at the point guard, and they had Royce O'Neal, who is sort of this G League guy that the Utah Jazz found. He's been solid for the past couple of years for them, so good for him.
Yeah, I think Royce O'Neal is absolutely one of those success stories. So, like, it's important. But I think Royce O'Neal is probably their best matchup on James Harden. So
from a defensive standpoint, right? But, like, if James Harden is hitting those step-back threes, how do you guard that?
If I had to go with historical trends, James Harden's step back threes haven't hit in the playoffs. So like that's
and that's you got to be fresh. to hit those shots? And how fresh is James Harden? That's an annual question when we get to this point in the year. So with that, how do you see the series going? I'm still trying to format.
I'm kind of for the Jazz. I kind of am.
You kind of always go against the Rockets. Let's just be real here.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I'm not a huge fan of the Rockets. Mostly, I'm not a huge fan of James Harden, although I absolutely respect his game, and like the accomplishments that he's had this year are phenomenal. And, you know, we can't say enough about how offensively sound he has been this year. And some of the shots that he hit are like some of the most incredible things I've ever seen, you know. And I watch plenty of Steph Curry, you know what I mean, and Kobe and LeBron. Like, I've seen a lot of really incredible things, but what James Harden has done this year has been truly remarkable. And, you know, I would be remiss in not saying that, you know.
Absolutely.
But I would say I think this might be a game series, to be honest. I think this might go down to the wire.
I disagree. I got Rockets in six.
Okay, that's fine.
And the reason why is because I think Ricky Rubio is a bigger loss than I ever anticipated it being. Donovan Mitchell is going to have to carry the team. And I'm not saying that he cannot do that. I mean, he's put up some gaudy scoring stats on his own, but he's going to have Chris Paul defending him. Chris Paul, and sometimes they're going to put PJ Tucker on him. Because he is the primary player on their offense. And during a playoff series, when you can focus on that sort of a thing, that's when you have to lean on your other players if you're the Jazz. And I don't know if the Jazz have the other players to... on offense, at least, to make the series a 7-game series.
Yeah, maybe so. I just think, like, if they can schematically stop James Harden a little bit or slow him down or, you know, something like that, I think the Rockets are going to be hard-pressed unless Chris Paul has a really great series. And the point with Rubio's health is important, but let's also not forget that Rubio may play.
We don't know.
It's not like he's been ruled out for the whole thing or anything like that. Sure. So, you know, we should definitely say that too.
Sure. Absolutely. What was I going to say about the Jazz? Like, the Jazz and the Rockets, they played last year and the Rockets won in five. I remember that Donovan Mitchell had that great game too. And then after that, the Rockets just shut him down. Really. For the duration of the series. I see something pretty similar happening this year. And it's not just because the Jazz and the Rockets come in with very similar teams to what they had last year. I just think that Donovan Mitchell is still the focus point of their offense. And when this is the playoffs, you can spend time scheming against that. You can spend time targeting that. I think the return of just Jeff Bezdelic to the Rockets coaching staff from a defensive standpoint has been important, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like most definitely. I don't think that there can be any question of that.
So what do you got? You got Rockets in seven?
Yeah, I think Rockets in seven is my most likely outcome. I could be wrong. You know, I'm not foreclosing the possibility that I'm completely off on this.
We're not foreclosing the possibility that we could be off on a bunch of series in the Western Conference. Let's just put it that way. We could be in for a lot of surprises, and that just makes doing this podcast more fun. Right, Vikram?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Like, this year, like, at least in the West, the first round of the West is actually really exciting. I'm not that excited about the East first round. I think it's going to be pretty pitiful, to be honest.
I don't think you're the only one who holds that opinion. I'm of the thought that most people hold that opinion and are just waiting for the second round to come around in the East. The East is going to have a lot of NBA TV games. let's just put it that way.
But yeah, that's a fair.
So anyways, that is our episode. We stretched it pretty long, but like, we had a lot of matchups to get to. We had a lot of things to talk about. So hopefully you guys stick around and listen to the entire thing and give us your thoughts about what the playoff matchups look like through our email, ballisticpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll be putting out episodes pretty often as these playoffs playoffs are going on, and give our thoughts about the matchups, right, Vikram?
Absolutely. We'll try to do this at least twice a week during the playoffs.
Yes, definitely.
I think that would be a fair assessment of what we're going to do.
Yeah. And
but if you guys have questions, most of our coverage during this time will be playoffs related, of course.
Yep, playoffs and some draft stuff. We'll get into draft stuff too as the lottery gets closer and closer, and if the lottery happens, then we'll also talk about that as well. And also impending free agency, we'll also do some obituaries for teams that are either not in the playoffs or have gotten eliminated from the playoffs. So, I mean, hopefully you guys are looking forward to that fun stuff. So for this episode, for Vikram, I'm Guru. We'll talk to you guys soon.